Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. We needed to get started before we max out the room and the fire marshal shuts us down. So I want to say thank you to all of you who came, and special thanks, Senator Casey. We're delighted you're here. I know that Senator Lugar and Henrietta Fore are on the way. They'll be here very shortly. So I'm feeling a little guilty. Last night I was asked to give a talk at a trade association here in town, and they decided to hold it at one of these steakhouses, you know, in Washington, where they celebrate the 3-pound lobster and the 16-ounce baked potato and the 22-ounce petite steak, you know. I mean, and I thought to myself, this is tomorrow morning we're going to open up a conference on hunger. And it's this terrible, terrible dichotomy, you know, for most Americans. We don't feel this problem. This is not a conference or an event about our guilt, however. This is a conference about trying to do something about this problem. And it's not, there are three dimensions to this crisis, I think. One is obviously the humanitarian crisis that's in front of us. And a country like the United States that has so much abundance just cannot sit back while 100 million people in the world are on the brink of starvation. We can't do that. It's also a crisis that's seriously eroding at least one and maybe two decades worth of development in the world. I mean, it's in health, especially for women and children. I mean, we're seriously seeing the erosion of long-term investments in human capital. And so we have to deal with it in that. And then finally, it's a security issue. We started off in life as a security think tank. And this is a security crisis. We're going to have fragile governments having to cope with refugees, having to cope with systemic poverty, and the violence that comes with that, and the danger that comes with it. So this combines itself into something that the world has to deal with, and certainly the United States has to deal with. I'd like to say very sincere thanks to Senator Casey and Senator Lugar for co-chairing this task force. This came up very quickly. We asked for their help. They were very enthusiastic. And it speaks to the commitment that these gentlemen have for building a better world. And obviously, America prospers when we have a better world. I'm very grateful for them taking that leadership. We're also today, and oh, Senator Lugar, welcome. We're delighted you're here. Henrietta, welcome. Can I just say, could you all turn off at least the loud part of your phones? You know, if you want it to vibrate and give you joy, that's okay with me. But please turn off the sound part of your phones, if you could. Thank you, Senator. Delighted you're here. Thank you. I was just saying that two of my very, very dear friends and people I admire so much, Dick Lugar and Henrietta Paulsman Fore, thank you for coming today. We're just very grateful that you're willing to be a part of this. This is a problem that frankly needs the impetus of committed senior leaders in government, and we're very proud that you're willing to be a part of that. Let me also just say a word of thanks to three individuals who were enormously important with this effort, and that was Kathy Woolard, who is the Executive Vice President of CARE, Rajul Pandya-Lorch, who is the Chief of Staff for the International Food Policy Research Institute, and Eric Schwartz, who made possible this work for us, and we're very grateful for that. We started about a year ago at CSIS, a project which we called Smart Power, and Tom Pickering was on that commission with us. And it was an effort to say, you know, America's been using an awful lot of muscle lately and not enough brains in dealing with the problems around the world. And frankly, the world has gotten to a point where it is uncertain about us. Nothing would help us more as a nation to reclaim the honor and dignity and the pride we have in ourselves and the confidence of the rest of the world than to tackle a problem like hunger. That's the purpose of this. This is to reshape our role and to make a contribution when there's such an important, pressing need like global poverty and global hunger. And it's in front of us now. It's now the time to work. We hope that this is a meaningful contribution. I'd like to turn to Steve Morrison. Steve and Johanna Nesseth-Tuttle were the co-chairs of this effort. Johanna can't be with us today. She's in the very final stages of having a baby. And so she's excused, okay? But Steve, you're going to help lead this. So why don't you get this program kicked off for real and introduce our senators. Thank you all for coming.
Good morning, and thank you all for being with us. I'm going to take just 5 minutes and quickly review what's in the report and the process by which we generated it, and then turn to our co-chairs to open the discussion. A special thanks to John for supporting us on this, for Geraldine Eddings, who helped write and shepherd this process forward, and to Karen Meacham, Kate Hoffler, Kate Schuster from CSIS, and Jody Joseph, and Connie Vallette and Neil Brown from the Senate staff. We chose to move rapidly on this because we felt like the moment really was upon us to try to assimilate thinking from a diverse group of experts who were concerned about this. And so we appealed to the Senate leadership, Senator Lugar and Senator Casey, to join with us in partnership and to use our special convening powers at CSIS to mobilize a diversity of expertise to come together and try and come up with a synthesis. And we deliberately kept this report fairly succinct and focused with around pragmatic policy steps that need to be taken and embraced on a bipartisan basis looking forward. We're very grateful to the range of think tanks, NGOs, and other institutions who contributed. That includes the Center for Global Development, IFPRI, Council on Foreign Relations, CARE, American Enterprise Institute, Oxfam, Bread for the World, U.S. Institute of Peace. All of them were members of this task force. We were joined by representatives of business and trade, by the Connect U.S. Fund and the Rockefeller Foundation. We also benefited enormously from the expert contributions from serving members of this administration, some of whom are here today, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the National Intelligence Council, National Renewable Energy Lab, the Government Accounting Office, Department of State, USAID, all contributed mightily. And then, of course, the World Food Program, Josette Sheeran and her staff were really integral in inspiring us to take this on. I think this model has worked, and I think we'll hear more in our comments here today. I won't dwell on the drivers of this crisis. We'll hear more about that. They're outlined, I think, fairly briefly and clearly in this. But the point here is we're at a great moment of challenge to U.S. leadership. It is a historic moment. We should seize it. Americans, we believe, will respond positively to the gravity of the challenges, to the humanitarian central imperative, and to the call for expanded U.S. leadership. We're also at a very special moment where we've had such commendable leadership on multiple fronts. And many of the people you're going to hear from today are indeed the leaders. Henrietta Fore has been at the forefront of the Bush administration's response. Josette Sheeran has been absolutely valiant in picking this up well before others among us saw the true gravity and the dimensions of this. Helene Gayle, a trustee of CSIS, a close friend, president of, and CEO of CARE, made a similar contribution. I think we can see also at World Bank and Robert Zoellick, at the UN, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, all have really contributed in an extraordinary way in the leadership. What are our recommendations? Our recommendations are, first and foremost, to modernize our emergency assistance, to build in greater scale, speed, liquidity, flexibility, and reliability and nutritional benefits. We lay out a plan to double the commitment. We lay out a plan that proposes to move to an immediate 25 to 50% flexibility for local or regional purchases, and over the next 5 years to move to a 50 to 75% range for local and regional purchases. We call for a much more aggressive and robust diplomacy, food aid convention. We call for greater innovation in terms of vouchers, insurance, social safety net programs, nutritional. Our second major recommendation is around restoring rural development and agricultural productivity to their prior positions as major priorities of U.S. foreign assistance approaches globally. We're calling for setting some distinct targets in productivity gains in the developing world, moving from a roughly $200 million a year commitment to $1 billion a year commitment. We outline the different kinds of deliverables that could be covered under such a program. We outline how we want to strive for a new network of a global network that interlinks universities and draws on the historical strengths and experiences of American land-grant universities and others, which in prior eras made major global contributions. We want to restore USAID's leadership as a center of expertise. We're also calling for a strong multilateral role in doubling the World Bank's role, better coordination of U.S. programs. We've made major achievements with PEPFAR, with the Millennium Challenge Corporation, and other innovative approaches on foreign assistance. They can be coordinated and brought into this approach. Our third is to revise our approach to biofuels, to deconflict, to be able to move forward simultaneously in the quest for food and fuel security. We're calling for a clarification of official approaches for accelerating cellulosic-based and other biofuels, for bringing into force sustainability criteria that give us a clearer picture of what the true input costs are, and for using trade policy in this respect to promote trade, global trade in biofuels. Our fourth is to change our approach on U.S. trade to give a higher promotion to developing country agriculture. Doha, of course, is the centerpiece. We need to urgently and on a sustained basis bring Doha forward. There are a number of other actions that can be taken that are laid out. The closing recommendation is really about advancing U.S. organizational capacities, building on what Henrietta and others have been able to do. We're calling for a White House-led interagency mechanism charged with developing a long-term strategic approach that interlinks our approaches on trade, energy development, emergency relief, and that strengthens and advances our multilateral coordination with the World Food Program, IFAD, World Bank, and others. We're calling for the creation of a robust, strong, expert-staffed bureau at USAID, a Bureau of Food, Agriculture, and Nutrition, for an intelligence estimate that would be on the desk of the next administration in early 2009, and for some innovations in the way that our commands are able to promote civil-military dialogues. So thank you all for being here, and I want to thank all of the members of the task force who contributed such a great amount of time and effort, all of those who came and presented at this. I'd now like to call upon Senator Robert Casey, Democrat from Pennsylvania, to open the discussion here. Senator Casey, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Steve, I want to thank you and thank John for opening our program this morning, and I want to thank Henrietta and Josette, who will follow us to this podium, and Mr. Ambassador for your presence here, and for so many others who made this gathering possible. I have a special word of thanks and gratitude to Senator Lugar, who is someone I've come to know in the last 18 months in my time in the United States Senate. And I think at a time when bipartisanship and leadership and commitment to principle is often not recognized, I think he stands as a shining example of so much of that and more, especially on this issue of caring for and worrying about and advocating for the vulnerable across the world. And I want to note his work over many years laboring in this vineyard, and I'm grateful and truly humbled and honored to be part of anything that he's taking a leadership role in. So, Senator, thank you for your presence here and for your great leadership over many, many years. It's difficult, I think, today to, in any way, to overstate the gravity, the moral gravity of this challenge for America and for the world. I think what brings everyone in this room together, no matter where you come from, whether you're a public policy expert, whether you're part of the more direct part of the legislative process, whether you're a citizen who just cares about this issue in your heart, we're here because we're summoned by our conscience, and we're summoned by the gravity of this problem. And I think that when I was reading the report, I was struck by so much in terms of the numbers, and you people in this room know the numbers better than I do. But just think of two groups of people who were mentioned early, I think, on the second page of this report, pregnant women and children across the world. It's hard to even comprehend what one mother and one child goes through, not to mention tens and tens and tens, if not hundreds of millions of families. So we think of them today, and I think we're reminded of the gravity of this issue. The numbers are staggering when you consider what's happened just to a couple of crops, wheat and rice, doubling and tripling in just the last couple of six months to 18 months. when you think about those numbers. 75 to 100 million people immediately in need right now. Some 2 billion of our fellow citizens across the world impacted seriously. And I think when we consider what's happening to our world, but in particular what's happening just to the goals set out by the Millennium Development Goals that were set out some time ago, cut in half poverty and disease by 2015. All those goals are undermined by this problem, and I think present a tremendous challenge. The security challenge can't be overstated. We saw that play out just in the last couple of months. So leadership by the United States of America is central to this. We know that. No good effort like this can succeed without U.S. leadership. I wanted to highlight just two of the major recommendations, just for a little amplification. The first one that I wanted to focus on was the need to modernize U.S. food assistance. Our current system for mobilizing and delivering food assistance abroad is antiquated and results in an unacceptable level of cost and inefficiency. Under the current U.S. system, shipping, handling, and other management costs can eat up to 65% of the budget. And if you think about U.S. Commodities and commodities that have their origin here, which can amount to almost half of the world food program supplies, they sometimes take as long as 6 months to get to their destination. Totally, totally unacceptable in this world when we can instantaneously communicate and make deliveries in other parts of our economy. Grain from the United States often arrives far too late and dampens rural grain prices. We're dealing with a system which is a $1.6 billion a year system, but it is badly broken. It's yielding declining returns at the very moment when performance to meet the urgent needs is most acute. We need a new system that significantly improves the speed, as the report says, the speed, agility, liquidity, and flexibility of our response mechanisms. Given the new threats we face, the U.S. can serve its national security and humanitarian objectives by fully funding overseas emergency food assistance programs. I was pleased that more than $1.8 billion in emergency food aid and related disaster assistance was allocated for fiscal year 2008 in our supplemental spending bill approved here in the Senate just last month. It's something I worked hard for, and many people in this room stood up and worked as well for that issue. But given the sheer scale of the problem, we need to do even more, and so I endorse the task force recommendation to double our emergency food relief budget to $3.2 billion. Finally, modernizing our food assistance means we have to pursue a robust multilateral approach, one that recognizes the strengths and limitations of the international institutions and works in relationship to them accordingly. We need to reinvigorate donor commitments and renew regular international consultations on emergency food relief. And secondly, and I'll conclude with this, the other recommendation pertaining to promoting developing country agriculture. We've seen a gross underinvestment in agricultural production and technology in the developing world by donors and developing countries alike. The question before us now is how can we correct systemically for this historic underinvestment? We need to examine how existing U.S. trade preferences, which are already in place for many developing countries, might be used to reduce technical barriers to developing country agricultural exports. And, of course, we need to do so much else, which I won't get into because we don't have the time, and you've heard some of the recommendations already. But suffice it to say that I've been blessed by a lot of things, and one of them is a good staff. Jofi Joseph is here. Jofi's in the second row here and has worked very hard on these issues. And I'm grateful for his work. And we're going to make sure that in our office, and I'm sure in many other offices here on Capitol Hill, that we're going to use these recommendations for further action. And in particular, I'm going to use them to work on developing legislation to focus on these urgent priorities. This is a problem and a challenge that we cannot delegate to some other part of the world or to some other country or to one organization, even the most effective organization on the planet. It's a challenge, I think, that's rooted in the scriptures, and it's as deep as our American heritage. We have a challenge to meet, and we have to get about doing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator Casey. Our second speaker, our second co-chair, is Senator Lugar, known to all of you. I think we were quite amazed to be successful in winning his agreement to co-chair this. He brings such a remarkable standing and authority on matters pertaining to foreign relations as ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, as a farmer, as a former chairman of the Agriculture Committee, as a leading voice on U.S. approaches on global energy. We're calling for an interlinked approach, and he has authority in so many of these different areas and speaks with such pragmatism and vision on them. And so thank you, Senator Lugar. Senator Lugar charged us in the second session that we held, in which he committed quite a bit of time in laying out many of his own views, charged us with trying to come forward with a concrete set of measures that would push the dial some on how people think and act on this, and I hope we've satisfied you on that. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I joined CSIS and my good friend John Hamry. I thank CSIS and John for hosting this event and for originating this wonderful task force. I thank you, Steve Morrison, for your very generous comments. Likewise, appreciate the work of Johanna Nesseth, and for that matter, the entire CSIS task force for truly an outstanding report. In my judgment, this report reflects the work of numerous contributors with expertise in many fields that affect global food security. It's a special privilege to be a co-chair with Bob Casey. We have enjoyed a relationship on the Foreign Relations Committee, which I know will continue in this field and very important endeavors in the years to come. And his leadership is remarkable. I want to just simply say, likewise, as we were all aware and Bob has pointed out, the current food crisis owes its existence to a complex web of factors that have come together at the same moment. The situation threatens to not just increase hunger, but to undo many of the development and health gains that have been achieved over the last decade. Our response must be as multifaceted as the cause. By 2015, it's predicted that the world will hold more than 7 billion people, with increasing stress on land, water, and energy supplies. In the days of Malthus, people worried that food production would not keep pace with growing population. But Malthus was wrong. Just as he and his contemporaries did not see the role that technology and innovation would play to overcome his dire predictions, today we must not allow an aversion to modern agricultural technology to doom a part of the world's population to chronic hunger and poverty. Conventional biotechnology and sustainable farming techniques have not been disseminated globally. Many regions miss the benefits of the Green Revolution. And since then, the level of investment devoted to raising agricultural productivity in the developing world has declined markedly. In some parts of the world, farmers are trying to feed their families with technology that would not seem out of place in biblical times. This represents a failure of both donor and host governments to focus development work in agriculture and in rural environments. Parts of the world may be starved for food, but they are also starved for science, as a fellow Hoosier, Robert Parlberg, has observed in his recent book of that title. Overcoming the science deficiency requires refocused attention on increasing investments in agricultural productivity through better seeds and fertilizers, improved and sustainable farming techniques, and farmer access to small loans and extension support. 23 countries are taking advantage of the most advanced technology, that is, genetically modified crops. Nearly all of them are food exporters. Not surprisingly, the nearly 40 countries that are threatened by the recent spikes in food prices and by increases in the number of undernourished are not on this list of 23. GM technology has provided significant farm yield increases and pesticide use decreases. Yet since 2000, many countries with chronic food insecurity have rejected or limited the import of genetically modified foodstuffs, including food aid. These countries include Zambia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique, Angola, Sudan, Namibia, and Benin, among others. The fear of genetically modified crops has been most prevalent in Europe. Many developing countries, especially in Africa, worry that if they adopt genetically modified crops, they will not be able to export to Europe. The governments and people of Europe must understand that their opposition, for whatever reason, to safe GM technology contributes to hunger in Africa. Major food-producing countries have more in common than just technology. They also have good agriculture schools that produce scientists and business entrepreneurs and extension services that disseminate information to small farmers. Nations experiencing food insecurity generally lack investments in human capital that are necessary to broaden and sustain growth in food production. The U.S. land-grant college system has provided this component to American agriculture. I have recommended that a similar structure be established globally. Such a network system of agricultural schools can provide advancements in technology and facilitate its transfer between nations. It can also provide the human capital that is necessary for sustainable development. Knowledgeable farmers and ambitious scientists will be at the core of any successful effort to meet global food needs in the face of rising populations, climate change, and energy scarcity. As the report before us today notes, food and energy security must be goals we pursue simultaneously. One does not need to detract from the other. And indeed, overcoming energy scarcity is one of the key components to ensuring an affordable and transportable global food supply. Abandoning biofuels ultimately would reduce the planet's ability to feed itself. The science that has gotten us to this point will also take us beyond the use of food crops for biofuels. Major progress can be made in accelerating advanced biofuels derived from agriculture, forest and municipal waste, and from special energy crops like switchgrass. When crises occur, we can view them as challenges or opportunities. I choose to see the food crisis as an opportunity for the United States to demonstrate its humanitarian and technological leadership. Our country has always stood for and been motivated by big ideas. From the founding of the Republic on the basis of freedom, the creation of a diverse continental nation, to putting a man on the moon. One of today's big ideas should be the eradication of hunger worldwide. We can bring America's dedication to science, innovation, technology, and education to bear on expanding the global food supply and helping others feed themselves. It is in our interest to lead the world in developing and disseminating innovative solutions to ensure that food scarcity does not hold back human potential Once again, I thank CSIS for its very timely leadership in establishing this task force. I appreciate the opportunity to put forward these ideas for the final report. And I look forward to working with Senator Casey and with all of you to advance proposals that can result in greater food security. Thank you very much.
Senators Casey and Lugar have kindly agreed to take a few comments and questions. Their time is limited, and so we're going to open the floor for a few comments and questions before moving to our next speaker, Henrietta Fore, Josette Sheeran, and Thomas Pickering. Are there any comments or questions folks would like to put forward? Alan, please identify yourself.
Yeah, Alan Moore, Global Health Consultant. I guess my question for the two senators really is, what do you see the market, how do you see the market in the Senate and in the Congress for, if you will, additional resources and the kinds of trade-offs that we're talking about, energy versus food?
Well, I do think that this is in this current environment where you have a lot of partisanship and there's more than we want to talk about, I think. But I do think there's a bipartisan commitment to this issue. And you could see it in the recent actions the last couple of weeks. Getting that dollar amount was probably thought to be not an impossible task, but a difficult task, and we got that done. But I don't underestimate how difficult it's going to be moving forward. We've got difficult days ahead of us, because if you look at next year, even with a new administration, whoever wins, and a new Congress, the fiscal situation is as dire as it can get. And the next president, the next Congress, is going to be facing a set of problems fiscally, not to mention three or four other major areas like health care and energy and foreign affairs that I'm not sure that any Congress or any president has faced in a generation. So it's going to be particularly difficult. That's why it's important that we have leadership from senior members like Senator Lugar and working with people in both parties to try to get this done. But I do think that just in terms of the principle, there's a great deal of bipartisan commitment. The dollars are probably the more difficult aspect of it. Senator Lugar.
I would agree with Senator Casey that there is a bipartisan support for movement on the world food issues as a tactical or technical matter. I find the Congress is in gridlock most of the time. If you were waiting for particular resolutions or measures to pass, it would wait for a long time. I suspect the leadership is likely to come from individual members, groups of members, particular committees, and their influence upon whichever administration happens to be in office at that point. I think with Henrietta Fore, we've been visiting about planning that she has been doing, which I think is exemplary, and it's indicative of the way in which administration officials have already picked this up. Likewise, seeing Josette here as reminds you of other conferences most of you have attended, which may have a sprinkling of members of Congress or our federal government, but very frequently you have a very large component of United Nations people. I'm impressed with the fact that officials from the United Nations have not only many ideas, but have been implementing these for a long time. The World Food Program, of course, is sort of a basic safety net, which deserves immediate support. And the report doesn't stint that, that even while we're talking about the agricultural colleges I was talking about, genetically modified food being adopted and so forth, there are people that need to be fed in the immediate few weeks and months. And so the United Nations is very important there. And I was reminded at a recent conference, likewise, the extraordinary work now being done by private foundations. One of the great aspects of American life has been the development of people who really are prepared to give billions of dollars, whether it be in the fight against HIV/AIDS or in the matter of world hunger, and are in fact out there now. So we're not just talking about appropriated funds and the battles that we have here, but really about a broader group of people in the private sector and the international organizations. And it seems to me, once again, individual leadership for each one of you can be instrumental in stimulating whichever of these factors that you find appropriate.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Well, I would respond, yes, great role. Specifically, without getting into an argument over which company can develop what, I was excited, as maybe some of you were, about a month ago when Monsanto said that right here in U.S. agriculture, leaving aside the rest of the world, there are changes that can be made through research in the next 12 or 15 years that may double or triple the yields of corn and soybeans I can get on my farm. I'm interested in this. You know, my dad got 40 or 50 bushels to the acre in the 1930s, 40s. We're getting even in a sort of a mediocre year, 140 to 150, and some years we get lucky at 180. I've seen this in my own lifetime, but that's a stretch of several decades. I like the idea of this being compressed into one or two decades. Now, if it can occur with Monsanto, if they're right, and I don't know, the seed has still got to be produced and the methods, but my guess is international research wherever it may be, that raises the right questions and that has then recipients of the research who are prepared to act upon it can make all the difference in this. We've had Dr. Norman Borlaug, when I was chairman of the Agriculture Committee, every year trying to think through all the things, not only in his life, but in his current activities as he moved into Africa, after he moved through the revolution in Asia. And the problem for Dr. Borlaug was receptivity of these ideas. The research was remarkable, but customs, export situations, these were the political factors that inhibited the research. So more power to the research, wherever it may be.